member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th of July, Anno Domini 2014. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Before we get to the news, I should mention that we are approaching our 25th anniversary on the air for 25.
I am old.
I was old when we started this, and I'm older now. Steve was what, about 4 months premature when we started this show?
I was going to say, how'd they do it? Did they even have electricity?
Yes. Back in the day, we...
Or was that squirrel cage that we still see in the museum running around?
So we had a megaphone, and we shouted real loud.
Keep that string taut.
You're right. Well, that wasn't Rudy Valley. Never mind. Anyway, here's the thing. We're going to have a bit of a party, so clear your calendars. And now that I've said that, of course, I don't remember the date. It's August 30th.
30th, yes.
August 30th, Saturday, August 30th, from noon to 2. We will be at Love and Cup at Park Point at RIT from noon to 2, doing the show live.
Wait a minute, does that mean I get to come?
No, you got to stay here and run the board.
I have to do the board. The board's here.
We'll probably have somebody doing the board. I don't know. This may come as a shock to you, but I don't run the station. Sometimes I don't even think Rob runs the station. But he's the one who would be able to answer that question.
Well, we know that, but...
Yeah. So if you put that on your calendar, interesting things could happen. It's August 30th, noon to 2.
I might be there.
At Love and Cup. I intend to be there personally myself.
Well, I mean...
Right. So, somebody ought to be there. And it'd be nice if it were the three of us.
Yeah.
All right, on to the news. Amazon has unveiled a new ebook subscription service dubbed Kindle Unlimited. The service gives access to both ebooks and audiobooks, though with restrictions on the latter. Kindle Unlimited is priced at $9.99 per month, which doesn't fool you. You know that's $10. With a 30-day free trial and allows users to read any number of the 600,000 available titles. By saying audiobooks are available, Amazon means that thousands of Kindle books come with free, professionally narrated Audible audiobooks. Kindle Unlimited subscribers also get 3 months of an Audible membership, which is normally $15 a month, which translates to 3 free audiobooks. There are no standalone audiobooks available through the service. Kindle Unlimited books are accessible on any Kindle or device that has a Kindle app. The program is more flexible than the Kindle owner's lending library, a perk of Amazon Prime that allows only Kindle-owning Prime members to read a limited selection of free ebooks. It's unclear what prevents users from abusing the service by downloading as many books as they can get their hands on and then disconnecting from Wi-Fi for a while. I'm not sure that's an abuse because you're still just reading a book that you have the right to read. But the introduction of the program comes not long after a public dispute between Amazon and Hachette erupted over contract terms, which reportedly centers on ebook pricing. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Kindle Unlimited ebook subscription service. And your choices are, wow, I can't wait, and interesting, but I don't own a Kindle, and meh, and paper books forever, and who reads cat videos forever. So far, we have 31 votes, and interesting, but I don't own a Kindle, is number one. Now, I know you're going to have a whole lot more to say about that, because you are who you are. And so if you look down the right-hand column, you'll see a section entitled Fascinating Stuff that has a link to the forums. And if you click on that, it will take you to the forums. The second forum down is Poll Discussions. And if you want to say something in there you can join Christian Scream Screen and me. We've already said things there. And you can do the same 19 July 14 Kindle Unlimited ebook subscription service. I personally am a fan of ebooks. I'm a voracious reader. I read constantly. That's what voracious reader means. And it doesn't actually mean that I eat books. I devour them, but I don't eat them.
Yes.
And so something like this actually is a deal for me.
Mm-hmm.
$10 a month for all the books I can read.
Oh, heck.
And it does work on any device. So the Kindle app on iPad, Kindle app on Android. So it doesn't have to be a physical Kindle.
Right.
The one of the big caveats, though, is that you have to keep paying forever. Normally, when you buy a Kindle book or books from other stores, it's yours to keep even if you stop the service. Here, you can't read it again unless you keep paying that money every month.
Right.
So it's interesting that we're seeing more and more of these service subscription services, like Hulu, Netflix for video, you know, Pandora, Moog, Spotify for audio, and now we're getting it for books as well. People don't see $10 a month as that much money. Until you start adding them all up together. And that sort of goes into the cord-cutting issue we've talked about cutting your cable TV bill. You look at your cable TV bill, and it's $200 a month. Well, I can cut that and get Hulu for, you know, $8 a month.
And Roku for $100 for Roku.
And Netflix for $8 a month. Yeah, and Amazon Prime for $8 a month. Yeah.
Now, Hulu gives you everything over the internet. Basically, you can get it just about anything, correct? But it's delayed.
Well, as with everything else, there are some things it has.
Yeah, but
and
it's
some
delayed.
Things it doesn't.
We have seen the Hulu is mostly TV shows and some movies, and Netflix is mostly movies and some TV shows. But there's a lot of overlap between them, and they're both doing first run shows now.
Right.
Original productions.
So now, like, say, would Hulu have something like? Well, I happen to like, say, like Fallen Skies.
Which is
on TNT.
I'll go and look. One of the things that we've seen some
like TNT, the Hallmark Channel,
and a lot of times you go to the website of that network. So on the TNT website, they may have those videos available.
Yeah.
The other issue we often see with Hulu and Netflix is that they don't show up there until like a season later.
Mm-hmm.
So say, you know, Fallen Skies is in season 4 now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still trying to bring Hulu up.
I got it.
They might only have season 3. So you may have to wait a season in order to see them online. But I'm seeing more and more networks are doing these second screen apps where, you know, sync your screen now. So during the show live, you can, on your tablet, for example, comment on the show, talk to other people watching the show live around the country. You can't do that with a DVR. So a lot of these shows and networks are now really pushing you to watch it live with that second screen option.
Falling Skies is actually available for free at TNT.tv.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which then you could just hook up your laptop to and then HDMI it to your widescreen.
Television, yeah.
Sure.
Now that we're seeing some limitation on tablets. The TNT app. I'm not sure specifically, but I've seen some of the, like the CBS app and the Fox app. You try to hook your tablet to your television, and it says no.
Wow.
It knows you're trying to use a large screen and says, no, this is only a small screen app. But some apps let you do that, and some apps don't.
Well, that's right. where again, another maybe a low-end box. You know, you can have set next to your TV with an HDMI on it that has internet connection.
When you're running,
you just connect to it, and
you're running on a computer, it doesn't know.
Yeah,
if you're on a Chromebox, that's sort of fair.
Yeah.
All right, we should probably get to the phones. Barb has been waiting patiently forever for Miranda Coit. Welcome, Bob. Barb? What's up?
Well, I'm trying to help a friend, and yes, it is a friend. It's not my computer.
Wink, wink, wink.
His computer was running very slow. Well, when I was looking, it's a Gateway Windows 7 64-bit. And yes, Mike is probably listening right now because he's home. I have his computer here at my house.
And he's got nothing else to do.
Pardon?
And he's got nothing else to do because you've got his computer.
You're right.
Tell him to come over and mow your lawn.
And so he didn't have a firewall, and he didn't have an antivirus. So I installed Zone Alarm. which is running good. That was earlier in the week. Then they started having problems with accessing their Hotmail email. And she couldn't change. I said, maybe you should change your password. She tried to do that, couldn't do it, called Hotmail. And for, I wasn't there when they called, but apparently they told them that someone was accessing files and was sending out suspicious emails. He got on their computer some way, and I know at work we used to do this. We used to have somebody remotely, when I worked, remotely take over. Which they did at Hotmail or Microsoft. Probably was Microsoft.
Well, that's the big thing. Was it really Microsoft or was it some other fake tech support company?
It was likely somebody else entirely.
Yeah.
Here's, so you don't think it was Microsoft?
No. Just because somebody says they're Microsoft. Come on, Barb. Here's the thing. If you're walking down the street and somebody walks up to you and says, I'm a policeman, give me your wallet. You know, well, but when somebody calls you and says, we're Microsoft, give us your password.
Or if you Google Microsoft help, you're going to find, and it's even worse on Bing, you're going to find all these ads at the top of the search.
Right.
And we have people all the time that call an ad company. And it's they give you Microsoft help, but they're not Microsoft.
Right. Well, you want to be at support.microsoft.com.
Yeah,
if you're
which
get help.
I don't think, I'm not sure. Like I said, I was not there when they did that. But what the problem is now is this searchus.com is, I was able to remove that. I did some research on my computer, and I see that it's ad-aware.
Yep.
So I removed that from their Internet Explorer, which he uses a lot, and he's also got Mozilla on there. I cannot get it off of Firefox. It will not come off.
Yeah.
So I looked last night, and I saw this Spy Hunter.
Yep.
I put that on. It was running. Well, of course, at the end. Well, let me back up. After they were talking to this guy, he wanted like $100-something to remove all the files. So that, to me, sounded suspicious, and thankfully they didn't.
And Spy Hunter wanted money, too, didn't they?
And that's actually cheap. A lot of these fake phone calls is $300.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's what you need to do, Barb. Whatever you're about to say, it's all the same. Here's what you need to do. You need to go to securitytango.com.
Right, okay.
And download all of that file with Dance the Security Tango.
Right.
And that will help you get rid of most of that stuff.
Okay.
There are some things that can only be gotten rid of by pulling the hard drive and setting it into another machine as the second hard drive.
And running other utilities.
Right. And that's way beyond me. I mean, I run Security Tango on my computer, but they don't have that on here. So I will do that.
And make sure, and if that doesn't fix everything, then you are going to have to take your computer to some reputable dealer who can then pull the hard drive and really scrub it. Because what happens is a lot of these programs are rootkits.
Yeah.
And what that means is they run at the root level before anything else starts.
The minute you turn it on, they're getting loaded.
So before you can remove them, they already own the machine and can prevent themselves from being removed.
Okay, understood. Okay. So at this point, I should just try the Security Tango and then go from there and see if it removes. Because I went on to Revo, and it's not even showing. The Spy Hunter is not showing in the Revo. I uninstalled it. But
it usually hides itself by a different name.
It came up with a little, you know how it comes up in the right-hand corner and tells you something? It came up just a little bit ago as I was holding, so I know it's still on the computer.
Yeah, usually it goes by a different name, different folder, because they don't want you to find it.
Yeah, many of these things that you will find are, in fact, they're more spyware.
Yeah, right.
So that's why I tell people, Dance the Security Tango. We've vetted all the software on that page.
Okay.
And we know it's good and clean. Now, again, even with that stuff, though, as I say on the page, you have to be careful what you're downloading.
Right.
Because what they will always lead you to is the 30-day free trial.
Right.
And they'll say it's a free download.
It is a free download.
But to use it, you have to pay.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Understood. All right. Thank you so much, guys.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Remember, you can watch us on the Ustream. You can listen to us on the live stream at jazz901.org. You can probably, if you want to come mow my lawn, I'll sit there and watch you. I don't care. It could, all that could happen. But in the meantime, we'll go back.
Mine needs it too.
Yours needs it too. In the meantime, we'll go back to the phones and talk to our friend Scott, all the way out there in Buffalo, New York.
Hello. Hello.
How are you?
I am okay.
Good.
So here's what's going on. For, I don't know, maybe 6 years, I've listened to useauto.com. And typically, you know, you go there, you download some file of theirs, and then that file is, when it's finished downloading, it turns into an iTunes file and goes in with your Audible books and with your books in.
Oh, Audible.com, okay, yeah.
Something new has happened recently. I plug in my iPhone to iTunes, and I tell it, okay, I want such and such book to now be on my iPhone. But when I am later trying to listen to that book, the new book I told it to listen to, it's not downloaded yet, not on my phone. I have to get it from the iCloud, which is not nice if I'm not near some Wi-Fi somewhere. And then I have the converse problem. When I direct iTunes to take the book off my iPhone, it doesn't.
Huh.
What operating system are you running on the iPhone?
OS 10 something or other. On the iPhone. Yeah. This updated it recently. Whatever the most recent.
So you're doing 7, okay.
Right.
I do have a problem. I've got an old iPod that I still use for audio, and it doesn't support some of the newer codecs.
Oh.
But that wouldn't be the issue if you're running OS 7.
No, my Mac OS 10, but the latest iPhone thing has been updated maybe last week.
Yeah. And so you go into iTunes and you check the book that you want synced, and then you hit the sync button?
Yeah, I hit the sync button. I go to a fly, I hit the sync button.
And do you see the progress bar?
And then when I look at the phone later on, it's not there. It has to be downloaded on the cloud.
Does the progress bar go across the top of the screen as if it's copying?
I don't remember right now. I'm sorry, I don't remember.
Yeah, you should be able to see the progress bar, although if it's just a single book, it may zip by so fast. Also,
but it sounds like he's loading it not to the phone, but to iCloud.
Well, you have to download it to your computer first, and then...
It's on the computer.
And then you sync it to the phone.
Yes.
In iTunes on the computer, you can pick your phone and see what media is on the phone already.
And you, oh, really?
To make sure.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's if you have the sidebar open on the left, if you click your phone, you can see the music and movies and things that are on the phone versus on iTunes in the computer.
All right.
And that will tell you if it made it over or not.
If it hasn't made it over, what does that mean?
I would try dragging the file. So in the iTunes window, go to your audiobook section and find that actual file listing in the iTunes list and drag that to the phone icon.
Okay.
And that's one way to put a single specific file from iTunes to the phone.
And when you do that, you should see that progress bar move as it goes over.
Right.
Again, it might be very fast
the progress bar replaces the equalizer bar in the top center of the iTunes window.
Right, it tells you what's being updated or whatever.
Right.
Yep.
But you should see it, because if it's an audiobook, it's going to be fairly big.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll give it a whirl. Thank you.
The other option is to use the Audible app on the phone itself and then download it to the phone when you're at home.
Right. Well, the Audible app is what I am using now to play my phone even through iTunes. I think I'm just maybe that's the problem. Because I'm not playing it through the iTunes. I'm playing it through the Audible app.
So if you sync it with iTunes, it plays in the music app, not the Audible app.
That's what's going on.
There you go.
I understand.
There you go.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Apropos of nothing, that also reminds me that tomorrow night at 9 o'clock, we'll be doing Sound Bites in Second Life. If you're a Second Life fur and you want to join us, send a note to Neil Infinity, N-I-H-I-L, Infinity, and I'll give you a teleport over to the Sound Bites place. 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Linden Time. That's our deal. We're Sound Bites. We're everywhere. We're just, I'm trying to think of a polite way to say that, but we're everywhere. We're on the air. We're on the web. We're streaming. We're on Ustream. We're in Second Life. We used to be on IRC, but for some reason there hasn't been anybody in there lately. We're everywhere.
There is a chat window available from Ustream, but it's one of those things where we're doing the show. It's hard to.
Well, yes, that's all. That's the reason I don't do IRC anymore, because I can't talk and read. But mainly, the people in IRC weren't talking about stuff on the show, so I'm trying to do two conversations at once in my head. You all know me; I have enough trouble with one. Back to the phones for that one conversation. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's up?
Thank you. In running, I have Windows 7, and in running the series of cleaning, when I do SpyBot, it comes up, finds some things, and says that I'm not the administrator, so I can't eliminate those two. But I am. It's my computer. I'm the only one logged on. The only way of getting on is through me or through guest.
Two things. If you right-click on the SpyBot icon, there may be a run as administrator. And there actually is an administrator user that's a different level. And you usually only see that when you're logged into safe mode. You see the administrator user and your user separately.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, most of the time I found, but like you say, right-clicking on that particular icon on your desktop, you can say run it as administrator. Some of them get hung up and checking the credentials of whether you are the administrator or not.
And that may even put two icons in your start menu, run normally and run as administrator. Because there's a danger in running as administrator. You can screw things up really easily as the administrator.
Right. One of the things that has always been an issue at Windows is that for the longest time, the first user was the administrator, which meant that you could do anything to the computer, including, as so many people have found out, throwing away the Windows folder, which makes
not a good idea.
The machine unbootable.
What's this 4 gigabyte file called swap using up all my hard drive? I'll delete it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so in other computers like Windows and the Mac, you don't normally run as the administrator, or in Linux it's called root. You create a user who has only user privileges, but also has the privilege to run as root when necessary. But it takes an extra step to do that.
Sudo make me a sandwich.
Right. So Windows 7 works much the same way, finally, which confuses people who've always assumed they were the administrator.
Uh-huh.
But it is much, much safer. You can't do stupid things without intending to do those stupid things. But that also means that when you want to run something like SpyBot as administrator, you have to go through that extra step of either, as Steve said, either right-clicking on the icon and selecting run as administrator, and it will probably ask you for your password again.
Okay.
Because you have administrator privileges, you just have to request that you use them. Or there may be a separate icon in the folder in the start menu that says SpyBot as admin, which will probably also ask you for your password because they're essentially the same thing.
Okay, well, I will try those things.
There you go.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Bye.
Yeah, that's something that's confused people for a long time, but in fact is very important, I'll tell you the truth. Being blocked from accidentally becoming running as administrator has saved my little tuchus any number of times. I'm glad to see that Windows is following suit with the rest of the computer industry, frankly, and making you have to go through that extra step in order to run as administrator.
They kind of started out a little bit with Vista and the user access controls, where if you wanted to do anything even remotely administrative, it right. popped up, you know, allow. So there are a lot of jokes about that. You just train people to hit allow.
Right. But now when you have to re-enter your password to do those things, even if you auto-load your user at startup, you still have to enter your password in order to do those administrative things. It makes it a little easier, a little more likely that you will actually pay a little bit of attention to what's going on there. All right, I'm going to read another news item. If I can actually pick up the sheet of paper. Apparently, I just washed my hands, can't do a thing with them. The long-rumored Apple iWatch, which may not actually be called that, might actually be quite a success in its first year on store shelves. Remember, this is all rumor, but according to data from Morgan Stanley analyst Katie Huberty, Apple will price the iWatch at $300 and sell between 30 and 60 million units in its first year on store shelves. This comes from a research report that Huberty wrote to investors on Monday. The report also acknowledges that there is a chance that the iWatch will fail, but Huberty believes those chances are somewhat slim. Her base case put Apple sale at 30 million units, with 60 million acting as the best case scenario for the company. Rumors have been swirling for well over a year that Apple is working on an iWatch to take on other wearable devices. Apple, of course, hasn't confirmed that's the case, but nearly every report and rumor suggests the device will be launching sometime this year, probably in time for Christmas. Wearables have quickly broken out as an important market for tech companies. Google is doubling down in the technology with its Android Wear mobile operating system, and some of Apple's top competitors, including Samsung and LG, are leveraging their operating system for that effort. Wearables are expected to grow considerably in the coming years. Late last year, Juniper Research reports the worldwide spending on wearables could hit $19 billion by 2018. If Huberty's own base forecast becomes a reality, however, Apple would generate $9 billion in the next year alone, potentially pushing the market to higher than expected gains in the next 12 months. In addition to talking wearables, Huberty briefly touched on brand loyalty, reporting that in developed countries, 90% of people who own Apple products keep them. That's up from 73% in December of 2011. No other company can come close to Apple on brand loyalty, according to Huberty. Samsung has a 77% retention rate, while Nokia stands at 58%, and LG has a 41% loyalty rate. So are you desperate for the iWatch? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. In putting together this report, I read something that I could not actually verify, so I didn't put it in the report itself, so I'll just report it as rumor.
None of this is verifiable. Right, it's all rumor.
It's all rumor. But they said that, in general, Apple, the fanboys, right, the people who will sell their firstborn to get whatever new toy Apple comes out with, there's about 8 million of them. So Apple is generally guaranteed to sell about 8 million of anything on first day.
That's a nice percentage.
Now, I don't know where they get the number 8 million. I have no idea. Again, this is all just somebody's, it's a 24-hour news cycle. You got to write something.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to be to then say that, and then to, you know, dribble it out to $30 million in the first year or $60 million in the first year, that's an entirely different level of reportage.
But it's crazy how many articles are running about all these rumors that no one knows anything about, and oh, it's going to be $200, and this other site says $300, and this other site says $400, and this other site says $100. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. And Apple,
I bet Apple doesn't even know yet.
Apple's looking at all those and saying, oh, people seem to like it at the $200 price.
Yeah.
So. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. You, I think we have Brian Primavilian on the line. It's 40 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Brian from Pavilion. I don't even know where I'm going with that. We have Brian from Pavilion on the line. Welcome, Brian. What's
That's
up?
That's scary.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Great, you?
I'm doing fine. A little bit of a summer cold, though.
I'll tell you, you know what? It's tea, put your feet up. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Actually,
that'll be $50. That'll be $50. Send it to Jazz 90.1.
No one on Soundbites is an actual doctor, nor do we play one on TV.
I used to, but I don't anymore. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
What's your? Do you have like a computer kind of problem?
I did, sort of, yes.
Actually, unbelievable.
I've found myself in that magic convergence where all of my computer equipment is garbage, and I need to start upgrading things.
Oh.
Yeah, but one thing I want to be strong on is the maintenance of my three websites.
Right.
And I've been using a professional-grade program called Xara, I believe it's pronounced X-A-R-A.
Okay, yeah, Xara. Yeah.
Pretty good, but they every time they do a release on it, they dumb it down. It gets bigger and slower and stupider. And I noticed that you were using WordPress to maintain the Soundbites website.
Yep.
Now, when I go to upgrade my equipment, if I was to give myself a decent Chromebook, I certainly would imagine I can build, you know, use that program on the Chromebook.
Yep.
Is that cloud-based?
Yes. You mean WordPress?
Uh-huh.
Yes, you can. You do everything through the cloud. So when you go to one of your sites, when you're signed in, you'll see an extra little bar across the top with things like, you know, creating a new document or a new post rather, or, you know, stuff like that. You can also log into an administrative panel where you can do all kinds of things. There's, in fact, I often maintain the Soundbites website from my Chromebook.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
An Apache server is recommended.
My question was, I want to also teach myself this fall to build mobile apps. You know, is it a hobby? You know, not for anything that's critical. And I was wondering, my research on the net seems to, you know, they give you plenty of interfaces and plenty of ways to do that. But all these companies that offer this want you to be captive to their server, or,
of course,
you know, distribution of it is going to be like probably their property as opposed to mine.
Right.
Now, is there something out there that you know of that I could just kind of partner with here on my new equipment and build myself and then distribute it myself?
Yes, there are several things that will let you do that. There are far more of them for Android than there are for Apple.
Yeah.
Because Apple is a more complex system in terms of the products that Apple has created to create their apps. Mm-hmm. But there used to be something called App Inventor.
Okay.
Which is at appinventor.mit.edu. Okay. Or appinventor.org, same, but they've split it out.
Right.
And there are several others that are out there that let you do that sort of stuff. Honestly, I have not personally played much with inventing apps. Not a programmer. I stink at it. I'm very slow.
Well, I'm not afraid to code at all. In fact, I rather enjoy it. I think I'm the one guy that likes doing it. And the thing is with distribution of it. Now, is this a payload? You know, the program like a payload could be downloaded.
Look. Here's your best bet. There is a group in town called App Rochester.
Yeah, App Rochester.
Oh, you're on it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's a group of developers that all get together, and then their next meeting is August 5th. It's approchester.wordpress.com, coincidentally. Also, approchester.com takes you there. And it's developers that get together and talk about developing apps. They're going to do the August meeting is on game rating certifications. But it's just free-form discussion of how to write apps, how to distribute them, how to make a living at it, and distribution is always the biggest thing. Getting into the Google Play Store or getting into the iOS App Store sort of get you that audience, but you can get lost in the shuffle with so many millions of apps available on each store.
Well, the work that I want to do will be very limited patronage. It's not something that I would distribute to make money, more directions and information for a specific group of people. It's not going to be anything that I'm going to retire on for sure. So
right. Well, in both cases, they can show you. You can talk to various people who use all kinds of different products. Right. I'm sure if they're like any other user group in town, they're more than happy to show you how their particular gizmo works.
Okay,
and they'd be happy to have yet another new member who's actually interested in programming.
No, that's cool. Yeah, actually, as far as the iWatch goes, I had to learn how to tell time first. So, but anyway, well, thank you for
your
help,
you can code, but you can't tell time.
No.
Yeah, I get it. Now I get it. Okay, thanks. You're good.
Thank you.
Have fun. Yeah, lots and lots of people would love to make apps. Sadly, and I've said this for years. Back in the day, every computer came with BASIC. Everybody could be a programmer. Not a great programmer, but you could program stuff. You could make stuff. But the problem is the price of poker keeps going up. Now you have to know how to code for graphical user interfaces. You have to know how to do all kinds of additional stuff. And it becomes an issue. So as time goes on, it gets harder and harder. But having things like App Inventor to get you started, having things like App Rochester to give you a support base is well worth it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ruth from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ruth. What's up?
Well, hi. I'm having a problem with my Mac.
Okay.
I have a 20-inch from early 2009, and the software recently updated to the OS 10 9.3 Maverick. And ever since then, it takes about 10 to 20 minutes for my computer to start up. And I originally had MacKeeper, but suddenly it keeps telling me that MacKeeper cannot connect to the internet to clean my Mac. So,
well, MacKeeper is a horrible program that everyone hates.
Don't hold
at
back.
The time it was recommended to me as something I could use, like a to do a security Tango, like.
Right. Yeah, we have good programs listed on the security Tango for Mac. MacKeeper in itself is not technically a bad program. They over advertise. I've seen websites that have like five MacKeeper ads on one website, and they tout that free download thing again. We were talking about earlier. It's a free download. Well, yeah, but you got to pay to make it do anything. There are free programs that are free to use. You don't have to pay anything. And so MacKeeper gets a lot of bad publicity because of their over aggressive marketing tactics.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things to try on your Mac is something called a safe boot. Hold the shift key down while you turn it on. And that will load just the core Mac OS itself, nothing extra, no extra programs, no third-party stuff, and see if that helps boot faster. And then you know that it's some incompatible software. Do you remember what version of the OS you upgraded from?
Yeah, at the time it was the latest and greatest, and I think it was the Leopard.
Okay, so from Leopard, you missed Snow Leopard, Lion, Mountain Lion, and now Mavericks. So you were five versions behind.
No, I had to buy the Lion.
Right. So you were several versions behind, and that can often cause problems when you try to jump too many versions.
Ah, okay.
So I went
from Leopard to Lion,
mm-hmm.
and then Lion kept updating until now it's Maverick, and when it updated to Maverick, that's when all the trouble started.
Well, Mavericks is an upgrade. That's not an update. You would have had to gone out and get that yourself.
Okay.
And often when you upgrade your system, you run into incompatible programs.
Mm.
And that could be what's causing your problem. So doing the safe boot will turn off a lot of those third-party programs and do just the core Apple boot. It's also possible that since you have an older computer, there might be a problem on the hard drive that is now showing up.
Right.
Because of the added work the computer is doing with the new operating system. So there's a program in the computer called Disk Utility in your utilities folder.
Let me get a pencil here. Okay, Disk Utility.
Disk Utility, yep, it's in the utilities folder. And that can run some basic tests on your hard drive to see if there's something going wrong with the hard drive.
Okay.
And so between the safe boot and Disk Utility, that can help you try to figure out what's going on. So if everything works fine under a safe boot, then you know it's one of your third-party programs that's causing the problem, and you have to start uninstalling them until you find it.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Good luck, Ruth. Yep.
Yeah, it's always an issue if you miss too many operating systems and then try to make too big a jump. And now we're seeing 10.10 is due out this fall. So people that are still running on 10.6 or 10.7, do some checking first. In fact, even if you're running 10.9, check your apps. You know, if you're running any third-party app, check it before you upgrade the operating system, especially some of the high-end Pro apps. Pro Tools is notorious for not working with new updates. Because it's trying to eke as much performance out of the computer as it can, they do a lot of low-level coding. And so when you upgrade the operating system, things like Pro Tools often don't work. And then suddenly you can't get your work that you're getting paid to do done.
Right.
So check your apps before you upgrade. Like upgrading from XP to Windows 8. That's a huge jump, and a lot of your stuff may not work.
Right. And we see this a lot. The nice thing about many companies is they've got system administrators, of which I was one till I retired, who did that as a matter of course.
Mm-hmm.
When new updates came out, we did not roll them out to the community until we had done some testing. Obviously, you can't test every case, but we made sure things worked together. And if they didn't, we let people know. This you can't use X. You could update it to, X.4, and it will run, but it's going to cost you money to do
that. You know where else they're having that issue? Believe it or not, cell phones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy just did a major, did an update to hers, messed up the whole phone, had to take it back and had reset it because it just changes everything. So now we're starting to see that more and more with phones.
It's almost worse with phones because you have the handset maker, and then you've got the OS it's running,
yep.
And then you've got the carrier on top of that that puts their own garbage.
And then the various apps that rely with it, I would assume, with various links within that operating system, and they go ahead and change those, and then all of a sudden all those apps that you were using are gone.
Yep.
Or they won't work right.
In fact, is your new phone straight Google?
No. Yep. I have a new phone. I have the Galaxy S5. I am in love with it.
Nice.
It's wonderful. Thank you.
That is nice.
It does have an amazing amount of cruft in it. All that bloatware. Some of it's from Samsung. Some of it's from Verizon. And I really hate it. That's why I like the Google, what are they calling it? Google Silver? Google Silver. They have Google has a new program that hasn't really started yet, but it's coming out soon. Mm-hmm. I believe it's called Google Silver. And what that if a phone is rated Google Silver, mm-hmm. it is a pure Android experience.
Ooh.
No nonsense from
no
the carrier.
No extra blowaway.
Nothing. Nothing.
Sweet. Because there is so much they do put in there, and no matter what you do, you cannot turn it off. Sorry, it's there. And it's like, wait a minute, I will never use some of these, and it's eating up my battery.
Exactly. And I can't get rid of them.
It's the same thing that we see on computers. Somebody paid the company to put that software on there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so, who was it? Dell would charge you an extra $50 to not include the crap? but going back to the Mac compatibility for a minute, there's a website called Roaring Apps, because a lot of the Mac code names were Roaring Cats. And it's a crowdsourced compatibility listing. So if you go to Roaring Apps, type in the program you use, and it will let you know what other people have seen on compatibility with new operating systems.
All right. Well, that music tells me that you've wasted an entire hour of your life that you will never get back again listening to this show. But for those of you who aren't terribly bright, you're going to get a whole nother chance to do it on the other side of this break. We are going to be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. You can call us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And you can talk to Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. We'll have all of you a whole lot more of this nonsense on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites and the Truly Great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And don't remember. Okay, I'm going to go home now. You guys do the second hour.
All right.
Don't forget, for those of you who were listening for the first hour, that was a long time ago, on August 30th, from noon to 2 p.m., we will be live at Lovin' Cup, which is at Park Point at RIT, celebrating our 25th anniversary. I don't know where Listen, all I drank was water during the
What's
break.
What's in that water, though?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what Rob puts in the water, whatever
That's
it was,
true.
I drank it.
Mm-hmm.
The colors, man. The colors.
The date is the 30th. We are celebrating our 25th.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's going to be great. We'll be broadcasting live from there. It's just going to be a lot of fun.
And they said I can come too.
They did say
yep,
you could come too.
I got word that, yep, I don't have to stay back here and run the board.
Yeah. You can find a lot more information about that on the jazz901.org website.
I don't know if you can put down a countdown clock on the webpage.
I'll look into that. We'll
to remind folks.
It's not actually...
Well, we have a count-up clock already on
right,
there.
Right. Our actual anniversary is the 3rd of September, but mm-hmm. that's going to be the middle of a week. So we're celebrating it as close as we can get, which is the 30th.
Within reason.
And there will be some people who say, well, you could have done it the following weekend because that's equidistant from the 3rd. and to those people, I say, but we'll go back to the phone.
Right. Sorry, George.
George comes on.
No, we don't tell him.
We'll give him a different microphone. Our next.
I don't believe you did that.
Yeah. I was not on the mic. I was across the mic. You guys don't go away.
There used to be a spray bottle of disinfectant in here. Yeah, I see the hand sanitizer.
Here's the hand sanitizer.
I don't think that'll work on the shirt.
Our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hello, Carl.
Hello, how are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay. I'm calling because during the first hour of the show, whenever I'd click on the listen link on the Jazz 90.1 website, the low bandwidth link worked fine. The high bandwidth link didn't. Now the high bandwidth link works fine, and I'm staying on the phone just to tell you what the problem was. Whenever I'd click on the high-speed listen link, I would get two error messages. The Windows Media Player would pop up, and it would give me an error message telling me that it can't play the site, and I forget exactly what it said. I believe one of the things it said, maybe the codec is incompatible, but in any case, it couldn't play. And simultaneously with that, I'd get a malware bytes pop-up that would say the website is suspicious. And when I'd go back to the Windows Media Player error message and I click on the help button, it would take me to a Microsoft website that say, would say Windows Media Player error C00D 1197. And then in the second hour, it works fine. So I can't complain about it anymore because it works now, but I just wanted to let you know.
How weird is that?
I see an error message on the computer behind Dave there that actually is the streaming server. I can't see what the error is, but there's a message there.
Yeah, and that error message means there's a critical component missing from the media player often enough that that you'll see that when you go to play a Blu-ray DVD, for example, and you don't have the right codec.
It's interesting. Because both the low speed and the high speed are hosted at jazz91.org, and the smartphone link goes to monroe.edu. So they're legitimate websites.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. We don't actually run that, but I will find out what's going on. We'll pass that on to Rob Linton and see what he has to say about it.
We did get a new streaming computer a few weeks ago, and
it may not.
Things have been a little strange since then.
It may not be 100% at this point, but we'll look into that. Thank you very much, Carl.
Okay, thanks, guys. Bye.
All right.
But that is a recommendation to people. If you're having trouble with the low speed link, try the high speed, or try the smartphone. There's three links to try on that website.
Yeah. The reality is that the high speed link is, of course, a better link when you're listening to some of the unbelievably phenomenal music that is played here. But for people just speaking, and particularly us, the low speed or smartphone link is perfectly acceptable. Quality. In fact, it's still higher quality than the material being presented, so no worries there. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hello, how are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm wonderful. This may not pertain to the last caller's problem, but I noticed that a lot of people have problems playing streaming, and one way I got around it, which is really easy, is just using VLC. Media player.
Yeah, don't use Windows Media Player. Might be the first suggestion.
VLC, I haven't thrown anything at it except for maybe one or two types of files that it won't play.
Yeah, it's an amazing little product. We're very impressed with it ourselves. I've been using VLC forever. That's V as in Victor, L as in Larry, C as in Charlie. You can get it, I think, at vlcland.org.
Yeah.
That's it.
.org. It's a great program. It's available for pretty much everything that runs on a computer, every operating system. It's free, completely free. It says it's a free download, but in this particular case, they really mean it. It's free to download. It's also free to use.
Yeah, free download and free to use.
It's open source. It's cross platform. It's all the right buzzwords.
They will take donations if you want to help support the project.
And as I often tell people, if you can afford to, you should always, donate or pay for the pro version or however they phrase it, because that's how we encourage them to make their products even better. But this is great. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for reminding us. I love VLC. Great program. Plays files, plays discs.
It plays all sorts of weird formats, too.
Yeah.
That why did people make video in weird formats? And,
all right, here's the other thing with VLC. It attaches to your browser.
Yeah.
So if you've got some something playing on there, you can hit that button. It will catch that video and download it to your desktop.
Yep, yep. VLC does almost everything you want it to do.
Because, yeah, you'll just see these like three balls up there up in the upper left-hand corner.
Yep.
And you just click on it and say, oh, yeah, you're watching this video. And you can select that file, download it, and it downloads it to your desktop.
Right. So you can see whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You can pause things.
Any YouTube
frame
video.
By frame.
Yep.
Does YouTube, does pretty much every format of audio or video that you will run across. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I've been using that for a couple of years now. It's great.
And it is free. And if you can afford to, if it is within your means, you should donate to the cause and encourage them to mm-hmm. do even more.
Yeah, as we talked before, you know, I mean, that's why, and I've told this story before too, you know, I did writing of programs for a couple of years and... It just got to be very discouraging because you'd put out updates and everything else and everybody would tell you how much they like it and everything else. And then you'd ask for donations, you know, any amount. And I think maybe on one program I got like $6. But yet I kept getting quite a few folks in a few different states saying, hey, when are you coming out with the updates? So one was to run a football pool. And I had it all laid out. It did everything for you. I did put a lot of time into that one. And that's the one I think I made maybe $5-$10.
Yeah, yeah.
But yet then everybody kept saying, when are you going to do the updates? When are you going to do the updates?
I always heard a lot of, as soon as it has this feature, I'll pay for it. As soon as it has this feature, I'll pay for it. If you don't pay for it, it's not going to get that feature.
That's exactly right. It's at videolan.org, VideoLan. Videolan.org, VLC Media Player.
And I don't know why their icon is a traffic cone, but it is.
It is.
It's bright orange, so you can see it on your desktop pretty mm-hmm. easily. Like maybe that's why.
mm-hmm. Maybe. Maybe all the other ones were taken. I don't know. It looks like a video cone with speaker holes in it.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that all means, but it's an amazing product.
Yeah, and, it is. It's great.
Yeah, and it runs on pretty much every operating system, so...
Mm-hmm.
Check it out, download it, love it, and donate it. Runs
even OS 2.
Even OS 2, it runs on Android. Yeah,
wow.
Even OS 2, they've got it for everything.
A dozen different variants of Linux.
Yep. And of course, they have a skin editor, so you can make it look like anything you want it to look like. It's just way cool. And again, it's free. Yeah. Pretty nifty. Yeah. Windows, Mac, various flavors of Linux, FreeBSD, Solaris, OS2, Syllable, QNX. Wow. All right. Back to the news, actually. We don't have anybody waiting in line, do we? No. Why not? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415, which I think spells Wigglesworth. Pretty sure. Microsoft on Thursday announced they are laying off 18,000 people. 18,000 people. The biggest group affected? The 12,500 former Nokia employees who joined Microsoft as part of the Nokia handset acquisition. That leaves another 5,500 Microsoft employees out of its current workforce of close to 130,000 who are being let go. Who are these individuals? Microsoft officials are declining to comment, unsurprisingly, beyond saying that about 1,351 of all those cut will be based in the Seattle area. But sources close to the company said that the cuts are affecting just about every group at the company, everything from legal to Xbox. Microsoft's Unified Operating Systems Group, under Executive Vice President Terry Myerson, is one of the units that will be affected immediately and directly, sources say. Myerson's team will begin making some of the organizational moves that other teams at Microsoft already have undertaken. Specifically, Myerson's group will be undoing the functional management structure put in place under CEO Steve Ballmer and former Microsoft Windows chief Steven Sinofsky. For the past 7-plus years, Windows was structured around a program management, development, software testing structure, a structure some felt created silos. CEO Satya Nadella is making the investment in core engineering tools a top priority as part of his new strategies for the company. That means he's prioritizing non-sexy, internal-facing tooling for things like source code control, collaboration management, and code sharing across divisions. Under the new structure, a number of Windows engineers, primarily dedicated testers, will no longer be needed. Instead, program managers and development engineers will be taking on new responsibilities, such as testing hypotheses. The goal is to make the OS team work more like lean startups than a more regimented and plotting one, adhering to 2- and 3-year planning, development, and testing cycles. So, are these layoffs a good idea of Microsoft? Do you think they can become lean and agile again? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free. 1-800-790-0415.
Did they keep anybody from Nokia?
I think maybe 1 or 2 high-level execs.
Out of,
probably
out of 14,000? A fire 5,000?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's
you think your company gets bought by Microsoft? Woohoo, we're going to be rich.
Yeah, no. I know. The guys who run the company are rich.
Yeah.
But that's about it. They're probably on the board now.
Yeah.
The Nokia guys are on the board, but that's about it. Microsoft is a history of missed opportunities. They didn't get the internet at all for, what, a decade? They came late to the game of phones. They came late to the game of tablets. They've got excellent offerings in all those areas now. There's no question of that. But they were late to the game. And not we're waiting till it's great to send it out. It was, particularly with the internet, it was, holy moly, what's this internet thing that everybody else is doing?
And they've typically been so big and had so much clout in the industry that it didn't matter that they were late.
Right.
But the internet has been this great equalizer. You don't need to be big on the internet. All you need to do is be fast.
Right.
And so that's not Microsoft's strong point.
No, it really isn't. when your company owns 99% of the market, there's not much you have to do to stay on top. But as time went on, they lost more and more of that market. Particularly when it came to phones and tablets, Apple led the way. Google wasn't far behind. Nokia wasn't far behind. And of course, eventually Microsoft bought them.
And how fast did BlackBerry die?
And how fast did BlackBerry die?
They were the king of phones.
Again, they assumed that because they had the BlackBerry Messenger, which is really their main thing,
and that physical keyboard on their phones,
and that physical keyboard, that they would always be on top, and not apparently what people actually wanted. Listen, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Google announced on Tuesday that it is launching Project Zero, an internal team of security specialists tasked with finding vulnerabilities in third-party software, not to exploit them, but to alert the developers and avoid the next Heartbleed. The Heartbleed bug put the whole industry, whole software industry, on heightened alert. And Google, there's a comma there. I wrote it. I put it there. Google, Facebook, Microsoft, and many others already formed a foundation earlier this year that aimed to work with popular open source projects to audit and improve their security. Project Zero is different, though. Google says it is creating what is called a well-staffed team to, and I quote, significantly reduce the number of people harmed by targeted attacks, unquote. The idea is to improve the security of any software that a large number of people depend on. To do this, Google is hiring security researchers to staff Project Zero, and it's looking to expand its bounties for external researchers who find security bugs in third-party software. All of the bug reports will be filed in an external database. There's nothing in it yet. and the company will report its bugs to the vendors only, not to any third parties. At first, it may seem odd that Google would put this amount of resources into finding bugs in third-party software. But almost every modern piece of software, whether it's a mobile, desktop, or web app, depends on lots of different parts from multiple vendors. Maybe it's a security solution that is meant to keep web surfers safe, or a mobile framework that developers use to build their Android apps. Those kinds of security issues may hit Google's users and maybe even its own infrastructure. So, is this Project Zero or Hero? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free 1-800-790-0415. You know, this isn't the first time we've seen something like this, where a third-party company says your inability to keep your apps clean is hurting our reputation, so we're going to fix them for you.
Yep.
Yeah, although they're not actually fixing, they're just
at least
telling people
pointing them out. Yeah. We hear that a lot. In fact, we had a couple of calls this week about the new Adobe update. What was it? Another emergency flash update.
Right.
And their browser quits working because all the modern browsers now will stop displaying flash when it's out of date and vulnerable. And people don't realize you click on the thing that says blocked plugin and that lets you update.
Right.
After they've already skipped all of the update notices they got.
Right.
But yeah, so we get this question a lot. My Safari doesn't work. My Chrome doesn't work. And it turns out the flash is old and as a safety measure, it's not being displayed in the browser.
Well, not using flash is a good thing. People have to stop it. Stop using flash. There's a new vulnerability every other hour.
Yep. So even if I do update it for you today, you know, next week there's going to be a new one. But the problem we have a bunch of customers that are little old ladies that like to play games online.
Yep. And those are all in flash now.
Almost all in flash. Although, what's interesting, she asked about Java. So I used to get these Java update notices. Well, yeah, Java's the other big vulnerability, and you have to keep that up to date. But less and less programs are being written in Java, so that's sort of winding down.
Right.
And Adobe's kind of winding down flash anyway. They're trying to shift it to something.
They've killed mobile flash. They're not even going to make it anymore. And so the big new thing, of course, is HTML5.
Yeah.
And we'll see where that takes us. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jay from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jay. What's up?
Hi. I heard earlier you were talking about smart watches.
Yeah.
And I have the Pebble.
Oh yeah. How do you like it?
I've had it for a few months now, and people always ask the question when I say the cool things that it does. They always ask, so can you make phone calls through it? And it's no. Well, can you send a text through it? And it's no. But I like the Pebble because it's simple and that it just gives notification of everything that goes to your phone.
Right.
Yeah, so it pairs with a phone.
A lot of apps that you can download on the Pebble. The worst thing about the Pebble, though, is the actual Android app. The actual watch itself is great, but the Android app is horrible.
Okay.
For Pebble, but the actual watch, that the notifications and everything,
right.
Really enjoy it.
It's a tiny, odd-sized screen, so Android programmers have to really figure out how to use that tiny screen well.
No, the programmers are fine. I don't have any issues with the programmers because I have a few apps downloaded and they work very well on the watch. But the actual Android app itself from
the Pebble pairs to the phone.
To download the apps is terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, and
but
I've heard good things about it. It you're right. It's simple. It's not that full-blown extension of the phone thing.
Yeah, it's a compatibility thing, and it's more of a companion to the smartphone. So while I'm at work and I'm at a meeting, I just turn my phone's buzzer off, and then I get all my notifications on my watch. So I can see my text messages, I can see my email, I can check the weather, I can see stocks, and anything that I set my notifications for to do will appear on my phone. I mean on my watch, without me even having to dig into my pocket to get my phone. Not that that's...
Yeah,
that's a huge, terrible thing, but it's a cool little device, yeah. And I get a lot of compliments on it.
And the list is $249, so that seems to be the reasonable cost.
It's $249 for the Pebble Steel. The regular Pebble, which is a little less fancy looking, I got the regular Pebble for $150.
$150, yeah, there we go.
And yeah, then yeah. I just bought a steel metal watch band.
Right.
Put that on. Yeah, instead of the rubber one that came with it. So.
No, I know two or three people who have a Pebble and they love them.
Yeah, very cool. So I see the Samsung one that has the touch screen and it's color and it just does so much. And I just think that's trying to do too much on your wrist. Where
yep.
the Pebble is just the right amount of things. It's a Game Boy, screen type of green color.
Yep.
But it does the job and it does it well. And I think they stuck in their lane, and that's why they're...
Yep. See, yes, and I agree with you. This is one of the things that we see happening all over the place. Nobody's content to do one thing well. They want to do everything.
Everything, yeah.
And you generally can't do everything well.
Almost never.
Right, right. So do one thing well and be happy with that little market.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I love you guys' show. I'm a member as well. And,
yes.
Thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you, Jay. We appreciate that. Thank you.
Right.
When we say member supported, we're not kidding.
We mean it, yeah.
And Jay is in it. That's what we like to see.
And the silly thing about the Galaxy Gear is it doesn't work with all the Galaxy phones. It only works with some of the Galaxy phones.
Well, I don't even know if it works with my new...
Yeah. You have to... Well, maybe that's the point. You have to get a... different gear for every different phone.
Oh, probably. Yeah. But again, it's nice if they do everything, I suppose.
Yeah.
But doing something is kind of a dying art in America, and I hate to see that.
And we're also seeing the fitness industry moving into wearables with things like the Fitbit and the... Nike Fuel Band.
Right.
And so that's one of the rumors about the Apple iWatch. It's going to do both things. It's going to be a companion to your phone. Such a first world problem that we don't want to take our phone out of the... Well, look, it just took you 10 seconds to get your phone out
of
your...
Oh, my heavens. I can actually do my heart rate.
You got your heart rate on, yeah. on the new
I
Galaxy 5.
I did it the
5.
First day. Yep. Scared myself so much, it jumped double and I put it away and never looked at it.
So between the fitness tracking and notifications on your wrist, but we all want the Dick Tracy watch,
right?
And we're close, but we can't get it that small yet, and still have it be too readable, or what we've sort of been seeing. In fact, we were talking about it earlier with your 5-inch phone. We don't want the wrist Dick Tracy computer anymore because we're old and we want the bigger
right.
phone size.
We're at the big screen size. My daughter can see those little things fine.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, hold on, get my magnifying glass. Now, the who was it who just came out with a bendable, was it LG? Just came out with a foldable, bendable, twistable video display. And if you can make a large enough screen out of that like wraps around your wrist.
There have been curved glass things shown for a couple of CESs too.
Right, but if your wrist doesn't fit that curve,
yeah.
Now the curve can fit your wrist.
Yep.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Greece, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
I wonder if you guys can give me a little information.
Probably not.
I have a Dell using 8.1 with Internet Explorer. This week when I went on, I wound up opening my laptop and I found a noticing computer shutting down with a little arrow running in circles. After about 15 minutes, it finally went off. I couldn't do anything. So I finally wound up going for troubleshooting, and it said failed, IEXPLORE.EX. I don't know what that is.
Repeat that, failed what?
IEXPLORE.EXE.
Oh, iExplorer. That's the program that creates your desktop.
Okay. And then it turned around. I went to troubleshooting, and I just fixed the problem, and it started and went to BITS service, B-I-T-S service. They ran for about 2 hours, and nothing happened, so I finally canceled it. And I didn't know what to do, and I was going to ready to bring it in. I remembered when I had my old XP, if I press the off button and hold it for 10 seconds, it usually cleared up the problem. Well
that forces it to turn off. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I pressed the button, I turned it off, and it came up. It worked better than ever.
Yeah.
I need to know what happened. What are those two things, Explorer XE and BitService?
Well, internet. All right. Apparently, the millions of people who work for Microsoft, they don't have anybody to make up names. So everything is called Explorer. Explorer.exe is the desktop. Internet Explorer is the web browser. So,
but annoyingly, iExplorer.exe is the desktop.
Right.
Process.
Right.
It's not the internet. What's the Internet Explorer process name?
That's Explorer.exe, I think. I don't know.
They're backwards.
That's basically my desktop.
And it's basically your desktop.
What's BitServices?
BitServices is the background intelligent transfer service. And what that does is, Microsoft Windows, in fact, every operating system nowadays, is really a whole bunch of semi-dependent programs. So when you load Windows, you're actually loading several dozen programs, all of which intercommunicate with each other and depend on each other.
I have 225 processes running on my computer right now.
Right, half of which are the actual operating system.
Yeah.
So the background intelligent transfer system is the thing that it does two things. It transfers data internally, but it also transfers data out to another machine. So you may have some form of virus that's running in the background, and rebooting made it not start up again, and that's why your machine runs better than ever. Again, it might not be a bad idea to dance the security tango.
I don't even know how to do that. I tried several times, but I could never get my machine into safe mode.
Windows 8 safe mode is different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like everything else in Windows 8.
Yeah, I haven't put that in the security tango yet, and I really should.
One of the things that also just may have been is programs crash every now and then for no reason you can discern or fix.
Okay.
And so the last time you tried to shut your computer down, it didn't finish shutting down. And so when you went back to it, it was still trying to shut down. But because it wasn't shut down, things are still running in the background. And one of the things that the Bit Service does is check for updates on the internet. But since it was trying to shut down, it probably shut down your internet link.
Gotcha.
And so it's the sort of conflagration of all these problems happening at once made the computer unresponsive. And so just forcing it to power off and starting over again often fixes those types of problems.
Right. To hold on the off button for 10 seconds seems to clean everything up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, forcing the machine to power off.
Whatever was running, it stopped, right? So that may do it. If you ever do want to get into safe mode, it's the shift button and then F8. So you know how we tell people with Windows 7, just keep tapping on the F8 key until it comes up? With Windows 8, you hold the shift button and start tapping that F8 key. And if you hit the timing exactly right, you will get some stuff.
Marvelous. Thank you very much. I appreciate your help. God bless you.
God bless you too. Thanks. All right, we're going to take another break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go back to the phones, I should clarify. On Windows 8, if you use that Shift F8 thing, it actually takes you to something called recovery, assuming that you're fast enough to hit it. If you're in recovery, you will see a button, see advanced repair options. You go into that and select troubleshoot. You go into that and select advanced options. You go into that and select Windows startup settings. You go into that and you enable safe mode. Then you reboot, and now you'll be able to go into safe mode. Or, when running Windows itself, open up, hold the Win key down and hit R for run, and type msconfig. On the boot tab of msconfig, you can select safe boot and minimal, which is pretty much, that's normal safe mode. Don't play with the others, just minimal. And then you go to restart, click OK, restart your machine, and now you'll be in safe mode. And then you have to go back into msconfig and uncheck safe boot to get out of it again.
Only Microsoft could screw up something so easy, like hitting F8.
Yeah. Well,
and bringing up the screen that just sits there and says, do you want to go in safe mode?
Yep.
Safe mode with network. It gave you all the features. It worked for many a years, Microsoft. You didn't have to reinvent the wheel and make it harder, just like the operating system, to find anything.
Yep.
If you're not signed into Windows, you can click on the power icon, hold the shift key down, and click restart.
And face
so
the east.
That's the easiest way.
Right, face the east, spit up jelly beans. Yeah.
Yeah. Stand on 1 foot.
And Microsoft says that's because Windows 8 PCs start up so quickly. There's not enough time to press
F8. Oh, yeah, right. And
I'm wearing sandals. I got to stand on a chair.
Yeah, really. I was born at night, not last night.
Right. We're going to go back to the phones. Jeez, our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Welcome, James. What's up?
Yeah, that VLC player, sometimes when I play videos, they stop and start, like if they're from a CNN website. If I have the VLC player, does that replace Windows Media or Adobe Flash?
Yes, and maybe. It depends on a number of things, but often that stopping and starting is not going to be fixed by something like VLC. That stopping and starting has to do with two things. The speed of the server at the other end, for example, CNN, and the speed of your internet connection in your home.
If you have VLC, do you still have to have Adobe Flash and Windows Media?
Sometimes. It depends on the media content at the other end.
Right.
So
you can't take Windows Media Player off your machine anyway, but you don't have to use it.
Uh-huh.
So what a lot of websites have started doing is using a newer format called HTML5. So instead of Flash, they'll use HTML5. So VLC will play that HTML5 for you, so you don't need Flash.
So if I put the VLC on, will videos automatically go to that?
Well, usually
if they have it available. Some videos are still only Flash.
I'm curious, because whatever they play on now, would they know enough to go to the VLC?
Well, VLC, when you install VLC, quite often it'll ask you if you want it to be your default. And it'll show the different file formats that you can select that you want it to be the default for.
So I would say yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and why? Is there a special file format for that?
Well, depending on whether it's playing a JPEG or, an MP3, MP4, there's a variety of formats that VLC will display and or play.
What they're doing is
quick default.
Right. What they're doing is giving you the option. You may have a favorite player for MP3s.
Oh, I see.
And you want to keep that.
Uh-huh.
So you would just uncheck that one.
Okay.
But if you don't have one.
You.
Yep. All right. There you go.
Yeah.
Thanks,
so
James.
So if you like using Well, I was going to say Winamp, but Winamp is gone.
No, I think Winamp is back.
Did they come back?
Total Recorder.
Total Recorder, yeah. Or you iTunes for your MP3s and you, something else for your Flash videos or HTML5 videos, then you can do that by
selectively
picking.
Yeah, they say there's more coming soon. But yes, Winamp...
They got bought by somebody who was shutting it down and...
And then they let it go and made it open source, and now somebody picked that up. So here's
some of those long
Winamp, which is not Winamp.
True.
But Winamp is out there, and it's pretty cool. But you may prefer... I use VLC for almost everything. I'm on Linux, and there are a couple of things that it's easier for me to do in Media Player, just because I happen to know it better. But other than that, I use VLC for almost everything, and it has so many codecs, and is which is the thing that it uses to translate what comes down through the network to your screen. It has so many of those, and in so many different formats, and so many different capabilities. But again, that won't stop the buffering problem where it stops playing and you see the little wheel for a while and then it starts again. That is solely an issue of the speed of the network. And by that, I mean not just your machine and your connection to the internet, but all the connections in between your computer and the other computer, and including the speed of the other computer at the other end. Because let's say you're at CNN and there's that tragedy with the Malaysia Airlines that just happened. There may be 200 million people all wanting to look at that at the same time. Nobody's got a machine that's ready to handle that. So
no
you
way.
you may get buffering.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do with you, nothing to do with your network connection. But the other end is
it's just a fact
slow.
Of life because
exactly
how,
right.
You know, the internet has grown so big, you know, it's a lot of folks want to blame it on this or that. And no, it's just we've gotten complacent. We just think we want everything instantly.
Right.
And when it's got to slow down a little bit, folks lose their, well, geez, this is totally unacceptable. No, totally right. Unacceptable would be, all right, we should be able to drop in an old dial-up system.
Yeah,
for the person, you know, or a center that they can go to. You think is unreasonable? Come on over here and get them back on dial-up. That should kick them back to reality.
Right, right.
The old hashing back and forth and waiting for the handshaking. And then you get connected, and it was monochrome.
TV shows still use that screeching modem noise to say the computer's connecting to the internet.
Yeah.
Even though the computers are always connected to the internet all the time these days.
My phone's default ringtone is the screeching modem.
Cool.
And it, you look around, and when my phone rings, I look around, and some people are going, what the? And other people are going, yeah, I know that noise. yeah, but it's, we've come a long way, but I admit it, I'm waiting for green light to come to my neighborhood because I want fiber speed. I admit it,
mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't complain about what I have now,
no.
Except internally in my head, because it's there's nothing wrong with it at all.
No, it is what it is, and you know you got to live with it.
Yep.
And that's the Weasley words up to when
yeah, right.
when you're looking at internet service providers, you can get up to 50 megabit. You're going to get one, but that's up to 50.
Right. Okay, here's the one I don't understand, this news story. We don't have time for the whole thing, but what's going on here is Microsoft is telling users to stop using strong passwords everywhere. They're saying on sites where it doesn't matter, where there's nothing super secure, go ahead and use an unsecure password. That's what they're saying. I personally believe that they're idiots. What they're essentially saying is, you're too dumb to remember a lot of passwords. So remember a few important ones and then use your pet's name for all the rest. what's not an important website? Your social media site? Because that's your reputation online. Your banking site? I don't think so. I don't know what an unimportant what an unimportant website is. Anyway, take our advice and always use strong passwords. All right, listen, that's it. You've wasted 2 hours of your life listening to us spew this nonsense out. Take next 166 hours off. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of Dave Enright. Steve, we don't know if we can handle more of Dave Enright. Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 55 minutes after the hour. Now, don't go anywhere, because George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow.
And you might want to use his other microphone.
And you might want to use the other microphone. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours. Bye-bye.